there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hello, we're back, and my voice is back, and this is the 39th episode of The Conversation, a Nordic Film Podcast. Today we're going to look at Sean Baker's new film, The Florida Project. But before we go, let's do some casual conversation. How are you doing? What are you drinking?
Hi, Tigme. I am drinking an Icelandic beer because I just got home from the airport. Well, from Iceland.
Yes.
I didn't spend some time in the airport. So I decided to bring some Icelandic beers with me.
It's very nice home. Of you. We thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Benefiting to the Icelandic economy.
Yes, yes, yes.
A little bit. This time it's an Einstök.
Ah.
And it's an Icelandic toasted porter.
Okay.
It's a tried and true one for me, and it's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very good brewery, actually. They make the second best white ale I have tasted.
Yeah, yeah, white ale.
So, yeah.
I was drinking that one up in Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you? Are you drinking an Icelandic brand as well?
I am not. I'm actually drinking Danish Weiss beer again.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So very polite of us.
Yes.
Today, huh? It's called Stückmann Weissbier.
Stückmann.
Yeah. Stückmann. Stückmann.
Okay. Stückmann.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nørrebro Brukhus.
Okay.
Yeah. It looks like this. Good for our audience. Yeah, it looks like this.
Yes. Yes. For the viewing audience.
Yeah. I will just pop this now.
Yeah, nice. I've tasted that one. Now he's drinking. And he's tasting. And we'll have to see if it's actually better than the Icelandic Einstök white ale.
Just like the other day, it somewhere between lager and Weissbier.
Okay.
It's not Weissbier. It's not the traditional one, at least. But
maybe there's different types of white ale.
I guess.
In Denmark.
Yeah.
Even. Yeah.
Anyways, it's okay. It's fine.
At least it looked like it was a big one.
Yes, it's 40 centiliters. So
yeah,
that's 7 more than I usually have for my Hoegaarden.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But as I said, I just returned from Iceland because we've had a birthday party together for
yes.
our kids. And we actually decided to record this thing together, like in person, but that never happened.
Yeah. Yeah, no time. As ever,
no.
we didn't have any time. You were like 3 days here, so.
Yeah, it was not that much, but it was amazing having a birthday party.
Yeah.
And the kids were happy.
Yeah, we thought about recording on the eve of the birthday party with our like 50 guests or so for our 2-year-old birthday, but there was no chance that was ever going to happen.
No.
You just basically got to bed and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually went back because Raskva was half sick at the birthday party.
Yeah.
And she just... She recovered once we got back so we could open some gifts and she was running a little bit around and it was a nice evening. So it was really good that we actually got home instead of starting to record because I would have hated to have missed that.
Yeah, she was sick. Part, you know? Poor thing.
Yeah, yeah. Seems like she's always sick, but you know, I think it's the whole flying thing this time, just being exposed to some bad stuff.
They kind of recycle the air in our place.
Yeah, and everybody is coughing in there.
Yeah.
Actually, also on the way back here, we were just thinking, oh my God, are we going to get sick once again now?
Since they banned smoking in the cabin, the air quality has gotten worse because now they recycle the air more than they did. and without taking in fresh air.
Okay.
Little known fact.
Yeah.
You know why I know it's true?
Because
Stephen Fry said it on QI.
Okay.
And yes, when he speaks, I listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
So there you go.
That's a very fun fact.
Yeah.
So maybe the air quality is better, but it was just hell sitting in there when somebody was smoking in front of you.
Yes.
You know. Have you ever been on a smoking flight?
No,
actually?
I'm not that old, Rune. Come on.
But still, I mean, I haven't been on one either.
No. I should think not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so maybe if I'm seeming a little bit rusty, I literally landed like 1.5 hours ago, something mm-hmm. like that. So bear with me, but I'll try to keep up.
It's a great excuse for you know, having nothing to say. Yeah, I'm really mm-hmm. tired. Just
yeah,
travel day.
Yeah.
But have you been watching something these past couple of weeks?
Well, we finished Big Little Lies, which I touched on briefly last time, and finishing it, I will even more recommend watching that thing. It is truly amazing.
I
would say so. It's one of the best you know, complete narratives in one season. It can stop right there. I would have hoped it wouldn't get a sequel, but it will. So they actually already hired or like booked Meryl Streep for the sequel.
Whoa.
So she'll be in it.
I love her. Yeah. She can do no wrong.
No, she can't, I guess. But the screenplay for the first season was based on a book.
Okay.
And the screenplay for the second season is based off a screenplay that they decided to concoct. You know, so...
You know.
There's that.
Let's see.
Yeah, let's see about that.
Stranger Things season 2 was good, so...
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah, mostly. Except number 8.
Yes, except episode 8. It's so good that we can remember. Episode 8 of Twin Peaks The Return was, however, amazing.
Amazing. That was something.
But also out of style with the rest of the show.
Yeah.
So maybe... That's a thing. So that's actually the only thing I've been watching. All the other things I've tried to watch, I've only watched halfway through or almost all the way through
mm-hmm.
For one reason or the other. I will just mention them really quickly.
Yeah.
Breadwinner. The Breadwinner, an animated movie that was nominated for the Oscars, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
Watched it halfway through. A very intriguing movie. So I'm looking forward to finishing that one. I just didn't have time. Winter Brothers. I just watched half of it in in the plane. Then
It's
on the plane.
Damn it.
Yemanthe is also on the plane, but I chose Winter Brothers because I thought maybe I could get all the way through that one. It was kind of short.
Okay.
But I only got halfway through. But I will say my initial thoughts on the first part is that, like, now I've already mentioned Twin Peaks once, but it is something that makes me think of Eraserhead a little bit.
Cool.
Yeah, the style and the way the narrative unfolds, it's very it's very mysterious, and then everything takes place within some sort of factory, very dusty, very gritty factory setting.
Cool.
So I'm looking very much forward to catching up with the second half.
Yeah, you just have to book a flight.
Yeah, just one more flight. And mm-hmm. and you could come down here and watch it also on the way.
I definitely
And then
could.
We can finally talk about Winter Brothers.
I'm flying with Iceland Air, actually, in a just over a month to the UK. So I can catch it then.
You should.
Because there's no sign of it in the cinemas here.
No.
What the fuck?
I have no idea. It's very different for a Danish movie, I think.
That's very presumptuous to call it a Danish movie. The director is Icelandic.
Language is yes. Danish.
Okay, yeah.
But there's definitely some Icelandic people sprinkled into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been taught at the Danish film school. So he's probably more Danish than
learned
Icelandic
everything
by
he
now.
Knows in Denmark.
Everything.
Yeah. Just brought us
his upbringing and his life has nothing to do with it.
Yes. He just brought his Icelandic superior genes over there and you know, learned everything. Yeah. Anyways, I have a TV comment.
Yes.
I haven't watched anything really. But I was going to mention it last time, but I always watch Frasier like a couple of times a week, you know, before bedtime, before falling asleep. Yeah. And the great John Mahoney just passed away recently.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I saw and I was also a little bit sad about that fact.
Yeah, it's sad. He was such a great actor, and it turns out people are saying he was just this great guy as well. And he was so good on that show. You know, the attention goes to, you know, Frasier and Niles, but he was really really important there.
He was the glue.
He was the glue.
Yeah. He was a little bit annoying in the beginning, like the first seasons, because his character had not quite developed yet. It was more like he was the nagging, angry dad. But then it became the
sure.
thing. I mean, it's usual
with
TV series. It takes
evolved,
a while.
Like Daphne evolved. Yeah. You know, like most of them all, I would say.
Yeah.
But
Mahoney.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Rest in peace, Mr.
Yes.
Mr. Mahoney. But I think there's a film we both saw that we wanted to mention. The much anticipated Mute by Duncan Jones.
Yes, I was yelling that out the last episode, right? That we had to watch it. I've watched it in several sittings, and I'm not quite sure I was awake for all of it.
Let's just say we decided not to make that a main feature on this show.
Yeah, it was really good that we could actually catch a movie in the cinema together.
Yeah,
when we were up there.
Yeah.
So Mute. What do you think about that one? Like, what are your thoughts? I saw your rating. Around 2 stars.
Yeah, 2 out of 5. So yeah.
So there's some good stuff in there.
Some good stuff. I think the whole universe, kind of the production design, was really impressive. I thought. I thought this must have cost something. It's cost a lot.
Yeah.
But do you know how? What's the budget on that thing?
I don't know what the budget was. No. Sorry, didn't look that up.
Yeah.
But as I told you, I do know that that he got a lot of inheritance from his dad as the only one in the family, like unlocked for a movie. So I would assume maybe this movie could have taken some of that allowance.
It's gotten really bad reviews. And I get that, but to be fair, I mean it's only a few mistakes he makes, but he kind of makes them all over the place and again and again and again. And just to name the American characters there, Paul Rudd and what's his name, Justin Theroux.
Mm-hmm.
Those were just caricature awful.
Yeah.
It just ruined the whole experience again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So mistakes were made. It's not a good film.
It really isn't. There's a lot of... It seems like it's a very personal film. Mm. It seems like something that Duncan really wanted to make.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of passion project that... I mean, it could really have gone both ways, but this one just didn't work. I think one of the main problems is actually also that the main character is mute. And somehow he can't really handle that, like the director. Like, it seems like you don't get enough out of Alexander Skarsgård as the mute protagonist, you know?
Yeah, I mean, all the color comes from somewhere else, and overly so, if I may say so, from Paul Rudd, especially, and a young, what was he named? The Apple guy, the founder of Apple. Oh my God! What? Come on,
what, Apple? Steve Jobs.
Yes, what? Young Steve Jobs, Justin Theroux.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was about those two. What, hitmen?
I don't know, surgeons.
Whatever they were.
There was this really weird turn there when kind of Paul Rudd found out his friend was, yeah, I don't know, taping then... young children in his changing mm-hmm. room. He was a doctor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he was just like, yeah, we're buds, you know, don't do that, you know, yeah. We're still my best friend.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
It was just a weird...
I wrote down, hire a writer, please.
Yeah. It's like, we need to touch on some sort of pedophilia aspect, but they're still friends and we can't really have them split up. So.
And everything is fine.
Kinda. So everything is fine after that one scene because... I mean, obviously he won't record anyone more anymore, you know. It's fine. Yeah, there was a lot of things. One thing I noted though, which I liked as a David Bowie fan,
yeah.
is that the first song or like the music when there's like this pod landing in the beginning, it was actually from a Philip Glass version of Heroes.
Yeah.
So, like the David Bowie song,
yeah,
and the movie is also attributed to his father. So, there was some. Well, it's not fan service, but it's like some tributes in there, mm-hmm. which I liked, and for that reason, I would also say, I mean, fine. I mean, this movie has probably some sort of significance for Duncan Jones himself.
Yeah,
you know, it takes place in Berlin, where David Bowie stayed for quite a while, and it was one of like his most productive couple of years there, and like the whole thing just seemed like a tribute to his father in many ways.
Sure,
but I mean, but it doesn't really redeem that it's not a really good movie.
No, I think that's all we need to say. I think.
Yeah, there's not so much else. I'm really sad that it turned out this way because they even put in some shots of his earlier movie, The Moon,
yeah.
with Sam Rockwell, which was a very, very good movie. Very low budget, but such a good idea. Like you were talking about hiring a screenwriter.
Yeah.
That movie was totally like storytelling all the way through, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was all about the story, and making Mute being this like joint universe thing just by having three two or three TV screens showing the trial of like some moon stuff. It just seemed kind of lazy. It seemed like a very lazy integration, and Mute has nothing to do with that world in my eyes. So, yeah, still go watch Moon.
Yeah,
I would say.
I'm gonna do that actually.
Yeah, but Mute, yeah, you should skip it probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Anything else you watched?
Well, I watched Icarus the other day.
Okay.
Yeah, you watched
from
that?
From Netflix.
Yeah. Did you see that?
No. I saw it won.
Yeah, it won.
Yeah. Should we get into talking a little bit about the Oscars?
Let's do that. Yeah, Icarus won for best documentary feature, and deservedly so. I don't know how many I saw. I didn't notice the nominations for that, but it's a very good documentary and about a shocking issue. How the Russians kind of stole the 2014 Olympic Games with a huge drug scandal. It's unbelievable, actually. But good okay. Doc there.
Yeah. So well worth the win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And the second one that Netflix wins at the Oscars. They won last year for what, White Helmets or something like that?
Okay.
Also a documentary
feature.
So they're bringing their A game.
Yeah, for it's coming along.
Yeah.
It's happening. Mm-hmm. But the winner of the night, The Shape of Water, did you see that already?
No, the 12th I'm going to watch it.
Yes, your bank thing. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I have tickets. but I'm somehow intrigued that kind of movie won, because from what I hear, it's a monster flick, but with emotional it's spin.
A very strange mixture of kind of a supernatural monster thing mixed with fantasy, and kind of the music reminded me of Amelie, kind of a French vibe there, and the production design is like exquisite. It got the award for production design, and the score is really really good, and it's really well deserved. I have to say, it's way better than La La Land for me.
Yeah. But something that you would say is in the same category in a way, because it's...
Well, it's not a musical.
No, it's not a musical.
Otherwise, but
Is kind it a bit of a silent film?
This is sign language. And while I'm very happy with the it won Best Picture, it was very much deservedly. So I haven't seen Lady Bird yet.
No.
But... I'm just so happy it beat three billboards.
Yeah, that was also the only thing I was worried about.
Of course, I didn't watch this thing. Of course, I mean, I make a point of not watching this thing, actually. Mm-hmm. But we kind of have to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I just want to finish. As happy as I am with it being Best Picture Director,
Well deserved.
Yes. Yeah. And production design and score, that's four. It didn't win for best actress. It didn't win for best supporting actor.
Mm-mm.
And especially for best supporting actor. This is not a reflection on Sam Rockwell, because like we talked about last time, I really like him. I think he's very good. I just think he wasn't directed properly in Three Billboards. Mm-hmm. And it was just ridiculous. So that's shameful that he got a big award like this. Anyways, Richard Jenkins, he should have taken that. He was amazing. Absolutely. Yeah. You see my face light up when I say he was amazing. And I say this is a tough category this year, because we also had Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Which we're going to talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But and, Sam
and
Rockwell.
I was thinking, I mean, he could really have taken that one. He should have taken it. Like, from what I've seen so far.
Willem Dafoe.
Of these movies. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, of course, I haven't seen The Shape of Water and, what, All the Money in the World with Christopher Plummer. But,
yeah.
But the other ones I've seen.
Yeah. But hang on. Hold that thought. Just Richard Jenkins.
I will.
He surprised me there. Sally Hawkins as the lead. Yeah. Mute woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So I'm kind of sad they didn't get the prizes, but it's the Oscars.
She's mute. Yeah. How did what's his name? Oh my God, I forgot the director's name.
Let's make the mention of the Oscars just derogatory. Let's just say, what's his face?
Yeah, what's his face? Yeah. Del Toro.
Yeah. Right? Guillermo del Toro. No. Yeah. No.
How did he handle, do you think, the aspect of her being mute? You know, now that we were talking about mute just before, Duncan Jones, it really didn't seem like he knew how to handle him being mute in a meaningful way.
Well, she communicated fine. People around her understood her and she was communicating. It's just that she had to be mute because of the love story.
Okay.
She's out of place. He's out of place.
Yeah. Okay. So she's communicating fine, like with sign language.
Yeah, she's communicating fine and everybody understands her. Well, the important people understand her, at least.
I was actually just thinking right now, like one of the reasons why it was starting to be a little bit boring, mute, was that he really had to write things down all the time in order to communicate. They didn't find any way of actually forwarding the narrative. You were always like bogged down with that.
He even had
thing.
To do that with the girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe that's something.
Well, anyway, like I was just curious since it's two characters being mute in two movies here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other comments on the Oscars? The Square didn't win.
No.
But A Fantastic Woman did, which I haven't seen.
I haven't seen. They're showing it now at a film festival in Reykjavik called Stockfish.
Yeah,
which have not been able to attend at all.
No,
sadly.
But I saw you grab the flyer.
I did.
So that's the first step.
That's the first step. Grab the flyer.
Yeah. one of the other foreign language films being nominated was On Body and Soul, which we talked about like at some point. It's a Hungarian movie. And I've been encouraged to watch it on a few occasions by my Hungarian friend, actually. So
is he to be trusted?
He is to be trusted. Yeah,
that's
I trust him very
it,
much. He's actually studying to become DP, director of photography.
Okay.
So yeah, I trust him. You hear that, Tomas?
So,
trust you.
So you knew him before he was famous. That's good.
Yes, yes.
That's a way in at some point in the future.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. So, any other Oscar comments?
Yeah.
You didn't watch it, did you?
No, I didn't watch it. No. I was in Iceland. It was my Elin and my 10-year anniversary.
Yes.
10th anniversary.
To the day?
Well, the thing is,
nobody knows.
Dating at the Oscars in 2000 and, well,
eight. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could do that math.
I could do that math.
So I think that was actually around the 24th or 20, 6th of February. But we decided to have our anniversary on Oscar night all the time. That so our anniversary is actually switching. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we never have time to watch the Oscars.
It's a living thing, this anniversary.
And we didn't watch the Oscars either. Huh? Yeah.
It's a living thing, this anniversary.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, we didn't watch the Oscars that evening either that we started dating. So, you know.
Just generally about the Oscars, though. I mean, I used to watch this, used to care about it.
Yeah.
No, I'm really.
No.
When you see a film like Three Billboards getting all this, you can't really take it seriously.
No, but I think I said in a voice message to you afterwards.
Yeah.
After our conversation, I really think it's because we see it as a drama and it's really meant to be a comedy. And if you're not getting the comedy, it's really a horrible movie. I think the people who can see the comedy in it somehow appreciate it much more. But like, it's, yeah, let's not get into that.
No,
let's not get into that.
No.
I'm just looking through all the nominations, and I would say the animated feature films.
Yes.
Where Coco won.
Coco.
I really want to watch Coco. I usually love Pixar movies. They have like varied in quality lately. but this one looks really amazing. But that's kind of to be expected. You know, it's beautiful animation they produce at Pixar. But the runner-up, the breadwinner, I think you should really try and check that out. It's about
Netflix
a family.
Thing.
It's on Netflix, okay. Yeah. And it's about a family in Afghanistan.
Okay.
Where the man of the family is being taken to prison for no good reason at all. And the family only consists of his wife and his almost marriage-ready daughter. And two kids, a daughter who is probably like around 9 years old, and a very little toddler guy, you know, like a man, a boy. Not
you
a
are
toddler
tired.
Man. Yes, I'm glad I made that disclaimer. But the very interesting part is that. It's definitely not an animated film for kids.
Yeah.
It's about how they're struggling to actually get food because women in that in the film here is not allowed to go outside without a man. So they can't really get out and get food. So the little kid who is 9 years old. Cuts all her hair off and pretends to be a boy instead, goes out and tries to do business. And as I said earlier, I've only watched it halfway through, but very intriguing, something you really should watch. And
sure.
The animating style is, it's like this cutout style. Very beautiful. It's been compared to Studio Ghibli. The studio that makes these anime movies, that the quality is as good as one of those like big companies, and I think this one is Irish based in Ireland. So yeah, I would recommend trying to watch The Breadwinner, and another runner up is Loving Vincent, which I really want to watch because it's a rotoscoping movie where they paint. All the frames in the style of Vincent van Gogh and tell the story about his life. So
very nice.
Yeah.
I'm just like finishing the cake from the birthday.
Okay, that's good. I brought home some Thristur, Icelandic special candy with chocolate.
Yeah.
What? And licorice?
Yes.
Is there anything else in it?
Yeah, some caramel thing.
Caramel thing. It's delicious.
It's good.
I'm going to move away from the microphone now, and I'll let you talk a little bit about the Oscars.
Okay. I have nothing more to say about the Oscars, and I think we should move on to our main feature. Yeah?
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
The man who lives in here gets arrested a lot. These are the rooms we're not supposed to go in. But let's go anyway. Could you give us some change, please? The doctor said we have asthma and we gotta eat ice cream right away.
Here you go.
Hey, Lee, got a situation here. Open up.
It's only second week of the summer and there's already been a dead fish in the pool.
We're trying to get it back alive.
Water balloons thrown at tourists.
Boobies! Boobies!
I failed as a mother, Mooney.
Yeah, Mom, you're a disgrace.
That was a clip from Sean Baker's new movie, The Florida Project, which takes place at a motel outside the Magic Kingdom. Actually with the same name, right? I think it was called Magic Kingdom as well. And we follow a six-year-old girl and her band of
misfits.
Small... Yeah. Not misfits, no. Well, just a band of her friends from this motel who have parents who are in trouble in many ways. They're not in a good place, at least. But the kids don't seem to care that much because it's all they know, and they're actually having a fun-loving summer.
Yeah, quite happy.
Yeah, that is just amazing. Tikva and I, we actually went to Bioparadis and watched it together this time. And we refrained from talking about it at all.
It's a weird moment there on the way back.
So... You were not familiar with Sean Baker before you went into that cinema.
No.
What was your main takeaway from this movie?
You remember what I said to you when it finished? I said something like, see, there's a guy who knows what he's doing.
Hmm.
That's my overwhelming thought. And I was quite happy. With this film.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you made me sit through the credits, which you always
yes,
do.
Yes, I did. I almost pulled you down into your seat and said, please.
Yes.
Chill.
And we did.
Yeah. We were the last people in the cinema. And it was a nice feeling, right?
Mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah.
It was a good movie. I have to say, just from the off, it was a really, really good movie. What did you make of the kids? I mean, Moni, the, what's her name? Brooklyn Prince.
Mm-hmm.
She did really well for a six-year-old. It's probably, I'm thinking maybe it's because she probably got many takes. Mm. I mean, there's like a montage, montage is probably the wrong word. It's like jump cut editing when she's sitting in a diner at one point.
Yeah.
And she's just very natural. And she was very natural most of the way through.
Yeah. But isn't it because many of these actors are not really actors?
Exactly.
They are just being themselves. They're being... they're being encouraged to just be themselves.
Sure. I mean, once people start to act, then you're in trouble,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And she did nothing. She was very good. Mm. She was very good. Most of the time. I mean,
yeah, and you could see like maybe some of the stuff there when she was required to actually act.
Yeah. You could sometimes tell a little bit.
It you fell know? A little bit apart, but, you know, not to a great extent.
Overall, very good.
Yeah, and she's such a sweet little girl.
Yeah. All of the kids, very
And very all good. The kids, yeah. And, you know, it's the beauty of this movie. I've written a few notes down here, but the beauty of it is that it focuses on these kids in such a dark world. but you only see their take on it. You can make conclusions, obviously, but the movie doesn't seem to care so much. It just cares about these kids, and they're having a fun time. Especially, for instance, that scene with the guy who's coming up to all the kids and asking them to maybe grab a soda with them.
Yeah.
And of course, it's addressed what he is, what he wants. Mm-hmm. But the kids have no idea. They're just kids.
Yeah.
They're just going around their business, and nobody knows any different. And it's just like, it's nice to see how they were protected in that environment, even though it was such a rough environment.
Sure. Yeah. It is a rough environment. You don't get that feeling from the kids. And I agree with you. That is the beauty of the film, that he has a story to tell, but mm-hmm. he tells it from the angle, a fun angle. Yeah. And similar to Tangerine, we kind of slowly realize it kind of slowly hits you. I felt like it suddenly hit me. This is like, this situation is horrible.
Yeah.
For the parents, for the grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to make it bearable for the kids. And kids, this is what the kids know. It kind of sneaks up on you, I felt.
Yeah. It does,
yeah.
Because it's not something that they spell out. It's something that you get between the lines and you see how it affects everyone around them. But one of the things I'm saying is, or like taking away from it, is that the movie is so genuine and it doesn't look down on this segment of people. Characters that you could very easily put your opinion on and mm-hmm. say, hey, you should probably do something there, something like that, or whatnot. There could be so many opinions put on top of them, but nothing like that here. Like, people are just being accepted
sure.
for what they are in this movie, at least from the perspective of Sean Baker. And I just love that.
You know. Absolutely, and the characters are very real, and like in every good film, they're very very well constructed. Mm-hmm. For instance, the Moni's mother, the actress is called Priya Vinyaite, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about the pronunciation. But she is such an interesting character. She's this, on one hand, this self-destructive type.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, she has these amazing survival skills. And, you know, you feel like you've met that type. This is a real person. And she's like in her 20s, and Moni's like 6 or 7.
Hmm.
So.
I mean, yeah, but you know, the whole movie is about her actually spiraling down into like a more sinister path.
Yeah.
Like, up until this point, she has managed to keep it together in more or less legit ways. But finally, she succumbs to that one thing that could earn her quite a few bucks.
Yes.
Very quickly.
Yes.
And it's just such, like, the first time you see that scene where Moni is, playing by herself.
Yeah.
You know, in the apartment.
Exactly.
You know what's going on. And it's such a horrible thing.
Yeah. With the radio on.
Yeah, the radio on.
Yeah. And you come to realize what's going on around that time, mm-hmm. really. And it
Yeah. But the setups here in this movie they're so natural. It doesn't seem forced in any way.
No.
Sometimes like you can see their setups. Other times it's just like it just rolls off.
Mm-hmm.
One thing in particular. See, this is me traveling day.
Yeah.
One traveling thing day, in particular. Second beer.
Yeah.
Okay. My tongue has not landed yet.
Okay.
Right in the beginning, we get introduced to the whole area by Moni running around with her friends, introducing everything.
Yeah.
And like to the new kid. And you're basically the new kid following along, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to the elevator and she's like, never take the elevator. It smells of piss. People are pissing in there. And a bit later, you have that long scene where William Dafoe and that other guy is standing inside the elevator having a discussion, like a very tough discussion. And you keep on thinking, oh my God, it must be horrible with the stench of pee in there. And it's such a hard thing to convey this sense of smell in a movie. But here, I felt like I got it there.
Yeah.
You know, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think it's a very clever way to tell a story. It's another kind of underbelly story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people are living in a motel on the outskirts, well, just beside the Disney's Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
And it's reality versus fantasy, really.
Mm-hmm.
And same as with Tangerine, actually. I felt there was a similarity there as we have L.A. Just Hollywood is right there.
Yeah.
The Dream Factory, the whatnot. And you have these trans gender prostitutes. In the same way, it kind of creeps up on you, their reality. Mm-hmm. Because it begins all fun games and attitudes and whatnot. And then when it like sun goes down, you kind of hit with it. Yeah, these people are in a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm. But horrible. They're coping. The best way they can.
They tell it in Tangerine. They tell it in some sense through comedy. Because it is kind of funny.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best vomit scene I've ever seen. When the guy vomits in the cab.
Yeah. Yeah.
that was so good. But, yeah. So, he's an artist in telling a story without telling the story. Can I say that? The main theme comes creeping up on you.
Yeah.
Feeling.
It's basically because it's character dramas, right? Like you get to know all the characters in good and bad, you know.
Sure.
And you see the environment that you just assume is kind of bad, but then you can tell that they're actually having fun here. But then you realize it's a coping mechanism.
Actually, yeah, absolutely.
Technically,
these two films are very different, I suppose. I mean, you told me about the how he shot Tangerine.
Yeah. Very low-key.
Very low-key. iPhones,
but probably, yeah, on iPhones. And probably that lent itself really well to Tangerine because it's the... You could really easily bring it along out on the streets and not be too noticeable.
Sure.
So it becomes really real. It becomes this documentary feel in a feature film.
Absolutely.
And you just told me that actually part of this movie, The Florida Project, was actually also shot on an iPhone. Few scenes of it.
Yeah, very hush,
so,
hush.
So Sean, yeah. So Sean Baker is a bit of a rebel filmmaker. Like, he doesn't go by all the laws.
Yeah, but don't take it, folks, like Tangerine is some weird phone films. It's not like that. I mean, I'm sure he used the Steadicam on a few occasions, even though he shot on
a Steadicam.
Yeah. Fancy. Yeah, I learned about Steadicam. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he also fitted different lenses on top of the iPhone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the iPhone is the main shooting device, but you can attach things to it.
Of course. So,
and the audio is definitely not from the iPhone.
Yeah. But what did you think about technical aspect of for instance, the camera work on the Florida project? Any comments?
Not really, because I felt like it just worked. There were some scenes that were beautiful in its grittiness. One scene that jumps into my head right away is the one that we go back to when Willem Dafoe is sometimes having his break as a janitor in the evening, just when the lights comes on, and he stands up on the first floor, I guess, looking over his kingdom, his magic motel kingdom, and it's just very, I wouldn't call it beautiful, but it conveys this sense of, I don't know what I'm really saying here. I'm tired.
You made the disclaimer before. Don't worry.
Yeah. I keep on coming back.
I have an observation. Mm-hmm. Because I like Ozu, the Japanese filmmaker, and mm-hmm. we talked about before how he Baker captures the little girl, mm-hmm. kind of being totally, probably just herself. And he does that on a few occasions with the kids playing, and he places the camera, and they're sitting with their backs to a wall, mm-hmm. and he places the camera low, just mm-hmm. like Ozu did, mm-hmm. and it's just there. He doesn't move it. It's just there. You may remember that Ozu really didn't move the camera almost at all. I think there are films of his that he just didn't move the camera. It was just placed, and it was placed in the same height as Baker does mm-hmm. with the kids.
Yeah.
So I thought that was nice. And I thought the framing was nice on many of his shots as well. Mm-hmm.
Now I just put a chocolate in my mouth. Sorry.
That's okay. Yes.
But you know, the reason why the camera is so low, it might be
kids are small.
To some Ozu, but it's also helping us to be on the same level as the kids.
Of course. Mm. I mean, the kids were sitting.
They're sitting, yeah. But also when they're running around, you're right behind them. We always see it from the perspective of the kids. So therefore, he's always putting the camera quite low. Mm-hmm. So it's actually part of their view of the world.
Of course.
Even when we're only with grown-ups, I mean, you have that, like, we keep that low angle so we get the kids' perspective.
Absolutely.
And
I'm sure he's not like copying Ozu, or even if it even went through his head, but still, I mean, in his movies, in Japan they like sit on the floor. Mm-hmm. So that's where the camera is placed, you know?
Yeah.
So it just brings it down to the level needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just really love this movie. When I'm looking at my rating, mm-hmm. 4 stars, I'm actually thinking it should get more, maybe. And I think maybe on a second viewing, I will appreciate it more. The reason why I took it down a little bit is because of those few moments we were talking about where the acting actually shines through, like where it breaks the illusion a little bit. But also it started to be a little bit long, I felt.
The pacing is slow.
Yeah, it's a slow, deliberate pacing, and that's also why I'm thinking if I rewatch the movie, it will probably not be as big of a problem. But watching it, I felt like you had been in the situation they're in for that long that you would be able to move forward now.
Yeah.
But he keeps you there for maybe just a good 15 minutes longer than I would have.
It is 115 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Still, yeah. I was wearing a thick sweater in the theater and I was really warm. Yeah. And I wasn't wearing anything else underneath it, so I couldn't take it off. So that would be weird. So I was just really, really warm in the theater, but still, I liked the quiet pacing, but that's a personal choice as well. I like that.
It is.
Because the way I was describing how the main themes creep up on you, I think that's related to the pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And the length. I understand your point. It could is. Maybe do with a 5 or 10 minutes less. It would be fine, but I didn't see it as a problem, really.
No. It's also one of those movies where once you get to the end, you realize why you sat through all of that.
Exactly.
And all of that is really good, you know, but it just... It's getting hard to look at. Because it is so grim.
It is so grim dark. There towards
you know,
the end.
There's
yes.
no light in there other than the perspective of the kids. But you start to think, oh my God, I mean, it's so sad that they have to cope with these things at this early age.
It affects you.
Yeah.
Because you see the fun and games in the beginning and you don't. You're like grinning and laughing even. And it's just fun and relationship between mother and daughter is kind of fun. I mean, the mother is really a really interesting character, and she does really well. I think the actress.
A bit Gilmore Girlsy.
No, I don't sorry, know I was about just, that. I don't know about that. But she's really good, and she's. I look forward to seeing more of her, the mother, there, who must have been a very young mother. When Moni came,
yeah,
but this is reality for many people, I guess. And there's something we hadn't mentioned. Yeah, so. Well, Willem Dafoe, he is really good. I will say that his character is like a good guy, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's very likable. He's very likable, but still he does really well.
But you know, there's some depth there as well. He gets a short scene with a family member.
Yeah.
Where you see that there's something underneath, but he's just putting all of his attention to running this facility. And you also realize that he's just the manager.
He's not the owner. Yeah.
And you think that he's just the owner.
You see different aspects of him.
Yeah, you realize that he's basically just following the whistle of another person.
And
and that was a fun aspect. So what did you end up giving it on Letterboxd?
I haven't actually logged it, but I think 4.5 should be.
Yeah.
4.5 is generous. 4 is maybe a little bit.
Yeah,
it's
low. A hard one. Yeah.
It's 4.5, something like that.
I have such a hard time giving 5 stars. And those 4.5s, they're even
they have to be very good. And this is this one is very, very good.
It is very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would love more people to make movies of this caliber.
I'm going to be following Sean Baker. Just curious. Yeah, that's for sure.
He's right there on Letterboxd.
Yeah, he's right there.
So I will be following him
also there.
Yeah.
Can I say one more thing that I forgot to mention?
Yes.
This is Florida. This is Orlando. Mm-hmm. It takes place in Orlando. And this is the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids talk about going to school in the fall and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But let's remember what it's like in Florida in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told you, I was there in May, and it was like 37 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
It was like unbearable heat. If you live there down there, you try to get out, I think, during the summer if you possibly can. With that in mind, I started thinking about it afterwards, and it kind of, nobody says it, but and nobody is like, oh, this is, you know, sweaty and stuff. But still, yeah. When you think about it, it must, it's like hell there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. We were talking a little bit about that actually in the car back from the screening.
Yeah.
And they do have that one scene where the power goes off and everybody comes running out within seconds.
Yes.
Because their ACs doesn't work anymore.
Yes.
But it's very true. I mean, being so hot.
Exactly. The kids, they say nothing. There's no problem for the kids.
No, they just want their ice cream.
Just like their situation. They don't really know how tough their situation is or the parent situation is.
No.
They just go ahead.
You know, one of the beautiful scenes also is at the ice cream parlor when the kids just go there and say, hey, you get free ice cream here because you can beg for money, you know? And they just see this begging for money as this normal thing of course you do that and then you get free ice cream. You don't do anything and you get ice cream. And it's so amazing how they take that. Like then you reflect upon that as a grown up, but them as kids, all they see is the result. And it's just like, this is clever kids, you know?
Exactly.
But it's because they see that in their upbringing, they see it in their parents, and this is what you do.
It's survival skills.
It is survival skills from the beginning.
Yeah. But if I had to, if I just sum up my kind of experience with this film, it's like, I think it's just brilliant to tell a story like this, underbelly story of poverty, difficulty, from like this fantastical point of view. And again, with the way it hits you there towards the end, it's really effective. I'm really impressed. Really impressed.
One last question before we end this conversation.
All right.
Were you, now that you're a parent, moved to let's not say tears, but like, were you feeling your tear canals working a little bit towards the end? Now that you're a parent?
I don't know about tears, but definitely it affected me more because I'm a parent to see what's going on there. I mean, there were kids there with no parents, just living with the grandma and you kind of got the feeling there's so much, like, there's no hope.
Exactly. And there's no hope, but there's so much hopefulness in the kids.
Yeah.
And that, like, those opposites are just what makes this movie such a tense movie to watch.
Yeah, fantasy versus reality, poverty versus the magic kingdom there on the doorstep. That's it.
I think people should start making a list of when movies are moving me to tears. I was not I was not crying in this movie, but I also tried to keep it together because we were out. You know, I shouldn't show that on our first movie in the cinema for like 1.5 years.
Yeah.
But it moved me. Like, even though I thought it was a bit tacky towards the end, then anyway, it just hit me. Maybe also, again, because I have a girl.
Yeah.
You know, and the main characters were these girls, and also, yeah.
You will always be the guy who shed a tear over Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Yes. You can never get away from that.
Not a tear.
Tears.
Several tears.
Oh my God.
On several points. Yes.
Yeah.
I can't hide from it. Mm-hmm. I can't hide from it. So yeah, go watch Florida Project.
Yeah.
It's
and, great and movie. Watch Tangerine. It's really good as well. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, and that one is on Netflix. And Florida Project should be in the cinemas in Denmark. It is definitely in the cinemas in Iceland.
Yeah.
And it's probably coming out on streaming platforms pretty soon now that the Oscars are over and it was nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Next time, what are we thinking?
I mean, you're watching Shape of Water.
Yes, the 12th.
Next Monday, yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that.
Maybe.
Maybe
we should do that one. And one thing that I was very excited about. Do you know Alex Garland?
Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you watch Ex Machina?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I wasn't as impressed as you were.
No.
I know that, but...
But fairly, intrigued.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Because now Annihilation is apparently a very hard movie to sell, which is why it only opens in the US. It just opened last week. But Paramount has decided just to hand over the publishing rights to Netflix for the rest of the world.
Really?
Yeah, so the rest of the world will get it on Netflix.
It's out, I think.
It's probably out. I think it was something like the 12th or the 23rd. It would be out. You can find it on Netflix now, but it's not actually there.
It's out.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm very excited to see that one because I felt like Ex Machina was one of the best movies of the year it came out. And Annihilation seems to split people quite a lot. But talking about Sean Baker, he really loved it. If you should...
Interesting.
Look at Letterboxd.
See that makes a difference now.
Yeah.
What he thinks.
Yeah, it does. So I'm very excited about that one. Let's just check out when it's actually being released. I do have a feeling that it's the 23rd, so it's probably the next one over this one.
I mean, we're going to watch that at least and see what...
But The Shape of Water, I will have watched, so maybe we could dive into that one a little bit more.
That's possibly for next time. We'll see what happens.
All right.
I think Karuna is a bit tired, so...
Yes. So I'm trying to wrap this thing up.
He should get some sleep, I think.
Yeah.
As always, you can find us everywhere. You know, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd.
Yeah. Pod Conversation on Twitter.
Yeah.
Right?
Pod Conversation.
We're very active there. Well, we've been active when we went to the cinema.
We have a tweet a week or so.
Yeah. Let's try and ask that.
Not bad. Not bad. But come see us and give us a review or give us a comment, get in touch, whatever.
Leave us some feedback. We're always looking for that. If you've watched The Florida Project or any of the movies we've been discussing, please let us know.
Mm-hmm. Even Three Billboards, watch that and see what you think.
I mean, as we said the last time, we would really love to hear from people who loved that movie. And let us hear why. Really. Please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. But thanks for listening. And we'll see each other soon enough.
Until next time. Bye-bye now.